This Much We Know is a podcast offering an honest and informative perspective of the realities and motivations of setting up a social enterprise. We'll be joined by guest social entrepreneurs and charity leaders whose trading models work to end homelessness. We'll be sharing their stories, tips, and of course, their facepalm moments.
Homeless Link is the national membership charity for organisations working directly with people who become homeless in England. We work to make services better and campaign for policy change that will help end homelessness. Homeless Link members get access to benefits that support you to build and develop your organisation and ensure your voice and experience is heard at a national, regional and local level. To find out more about Homeless Link membership for your organisation, visit homeless.org.uk/join. So we're really excited for today's episode of This Much We Know. We are joined by Dan Northover from Handcrafted. Dan, what we do on the podcast is usually get you to talk a bit about yourself, your background, and then you can talk us through the Handcrafted story.
Thanks. So I'm CEO of Handcrafted. I started Handcrafted 11 years ago whilst I was still also working as an accountant within the civil service. But the reason I wanted to start it is I was finding I was getting to know people sort of on the streets of Durham where I was living, people coming to different charities and churches and really enjoying getting to know people and seeing sort of how much they had to offer, how much they could do, and getting really frustrated with the ways that we were working with them. One of the big things that really jarred with me was once I was cooking a really rubbish pasta bake as part of like a sort of church project for the homeless and gave it to someone who had at one point worked in a Michelin star restaurant. And so that was where I thought, actually, this needs to be the other way around. We need to be doing something different. And so, yeah. And so that's where we started the journey of looking at Handcrafted and trying to find a different way of working with people. And so that, for the last 12 years, that's been my real passion and that's what I've been getting stuck into.
And so a 12-year journey to this point, Dan, where are you at now and what's your model? How does Handcrafted make money?
I got together with some other people and we actually started with a carpentry workshop where we got together with a few people and we started making stuff. We started doing a bit of landscape gardening and we had this idea that we just wanted to get together and do creative stuff together, working as equals. And at that stage, we are really open-minded about where it would go, but it's gone in all sorts of different directions. So that's quite a broad question as to what we do and how we make money, but I'll give a few examples. So one thing we found is that we're working with people who were homeless, but also, again, had skills, plasterers, plumbers, electricians, and there were derelict houses around. So we had to go at getting a really derelict house and completely doing it up and making it somewhere that people could live. And that went really well. And so then we started becoming a housing charity and we did that one. And then we kept getting more and more of these houses, working on them, building them up, and to the point now where we've got 50 houses. So we've kept doing that and persuading people to buy houses and then pay us to renovate them, and then supporting people in a really good quality house that they feel is theirs and they can put their own stamp on it. And then cooking was a big part of that founding story. And so yeah, we've done lots of cooking, training people to cook, and then catering at different events, putting meals on. One of the projects that we've got going at the moment is we've got a couple of kitchens, and in those kitchens there's a freezer full of food. So if someone comes in and they're hungry, I guess like a food bank or something like that, they can come in, say they need food, and we can give them a handful of frozen ready meals. But then at the same time, we can say to them, well, these were cooked here in this kitchen by other people who we're teaching to cook. So actually, tomorrow you can have these now, then tomorrow you can come in, you can cook some meals and you can eat one, and then you can put some in the freezer, and then the next person can come and can come and take some frozen food. And so we've got this kitchen where people can get the food they need. They can cook for other people in need. And then they can also be catering for events and preparing meals for a cafe. So we've got all of these different things going on, and it's a combination of sort of people, sort of social enterprise, traditional charity, and actually sort of trying to bring those things together to meet those needs. And what we're going for is a really empowering way of doing that.
That's brilliant. It's so interesting hearing it from this side. With the catering, is that, are you sort of working with corporates for corporate events? Is it sort of more looking for the sort of members of the public as individuals?
So the most recent one we did was for an event which was a wilderness challenge. And as part of that, they put on big meals for 100 or so people. And so we did some very off-grid cooking of goulash in the wilderness. So it really varies. Then yesterday we were catering for an Eid event for the young asylum seekers in County Durham. So really, really broad. We're really open to taking on different opportunities. And then we're about to start opening our first cafe to try and make a more regular pattern out of this. So one of our big renovation projects that we've been taking on is we took over a pub in Gateshead, and we've completely gutted that out. We've converted the top floor into supported housing. The sort of community events room is now another carpentry workshop. We've got a lovely training kitchen in the kitchen. We've got a plastic recycling project in the basement, in the beer cellar. And then the main pub area is about to open up as a cafe. And that's, again, it's going to be a cafe where in the morning a typical cafe where people can come get their coffee, their bacon sandwiches, their slice of cake. Then at lunch, we're going to open it up as a big communal lunch. And then in the afternoon, there's going to be various groups and services that people can come from the community to access to try and provide that sort of holistic support across the community. So it's, again, that theme of trying to combine the sort of traditional charity model with a sort of social enterprise and overall in it, quite an empowering approach to doing it.
How do you keep track of everything, Dan? Because it sounds like you're doing so much.
If I sit still, I get very restless. And if I do one thing for too long, then I get a new idea. So the challenge is the other way around, trying to stick to one thing. But I think the thing is we're trying to work with hundreds of really marginalized people, and believing that for every single one of those people, that they have their own interests, their own skills, their own ambitions. And so we're really trying to avoid saying, this is our project, this is our approach, this is what we do, and you have to fit into that. What's much more exciting and what a much better way of doing it is actually bringing people in, getting to know them and exploring what they want to do and working with that. And that does take us in so many different ways and deliver such different service. But actually, the real value is it is a much more genuinely person-centered approach to working with people.
In lots of the sort of different, I guess, enterprise ideas that you're doing, it's kind of that making something, you know, seeing something physical at the end of it. What do you think that has sort of impact on people, allowing them to sort of, I guess, be empowered to see something physical?
Yeah, so one of our big things is that we always say, and we always try and do this, is that whenever someone engages with Handcrafted as an organization, on their first day, we want them to take away in their hands something that they have made. So going back to the name Handcrafted, the roots, we always wanted to work creatively and practically. And it's part of helping people who've had a lifetime of being told that they've got nothing to offer and feeling very low value. Actually, we want to make sure that by the end of that day, they have got something tangible that they can take back with them. And that could be a little Tupperware box of a meal that they've made. It's quite often a chopping board that they've made in the workshop. It could be a small craft item, but actually something really good quality that makes them think, actually, I have got something to offer. I can do something. And so that's a real sort of core part of what we do. So although we do a lot of different things, there are things that we always tie it back to. And we always tie it back to doing creative stuff, making stuff. And what we make, yeah, in our workshops, we've got everything going on from people making coffee tables to making coffees, people making plant pots out of recycled plastic, people, yeah, printing T-shirts and sort of wearing those T-shirts that they've printed. We've got all the different sort of things going on, so that actually trying to sort of cater to the real diversity of marginalised people.
And then the housing side as well, you know, supporting people to have a contribution and making these sort of, you know, supporting housing offers their home. How does that change, do you think, the relationship of how people feel in their home, look after their home? Is that, do you see a difference?
Yeah, when it works well, what's really exciting is being able to house people who've perhaps got quite a long history of not being able to hold down tenancies or look after the place where they're living. And so, yeah, we will go on that journey of trying to make people's house like they want it to be, trying to make it a quality that they like. And when they kick the door off the hinges or smash a hole in the plaster, then we'll work with them on replastering that and hanging the door back on its hinges and keep doing that until they do feel the ownership of the space and feel settled in there. And I think we have, where it works, we've seen, it's really exciting to see people for the first time actually feel settled. Because sometimes people are coming from their entire life since early childhood, they've moved around and never felt that any place is their own. So sometimes when we've had someone settle in a place for a year, that's the longest they've ever been anywhere. And so we really want to run with that and help them sort of really take ownership of that space and make it look like theirs.
And how do you, across all the stuff that you're doing, because I like the fact you casually just said we've got 50 houses, and that is a task in itself, just running that or managing that or supporting that many people. How do you measure impact across all of the different areas that you're active in?
What we're trying to do is we're trying to help people move from the chaos of the storm to lasting transformation, is what we say. So we're trying to help people build up their empowerment and build lasting stability for themselves. So we look at impact in terms of empowerment, in terms of people progressing, but in also in terms of people managing to maintain that stability. Because actually for none of us, life's just a constant progress from success to success. Like, life's actually quite a bumpy ride for all of us. We have our ups and downs. And what we need is the resilience and the stability to last through that. And I think that's even more so for a lot of the people we're working with. And so we want to see them sort of progress in terms of a number of areas. So in terms of living space, having somewhere that they feel safe and comfortable, that's their own, having a network of people that they feel supported by, having something to do with their time, building their self-confidence, and being able to cope with the knocks of life. And so actually, for one of our key measures of impact is how long people manage to maintain stability across all of those areas.
And sort of on that, I guess, you know, you see a lot in the sector of, I guess, the niche of grant funding, but having sort of 6-week programs, 12-month programs, you know, how does that work for Handcrafted in terms of length of engagement?
In terms of grant funders, we've been really lucky to really be able to sort of build a lot of long-term relationships with grant funders who really understand what we're trying to do and are really, really passionate about a person-centered approach to people with really complex needs. And we're starting to hear that more and more. People are talking about trying to understand better the traumatic backgrounds that people are coming from and how that shapes what our expectations should be for people. So I think that there's a lot of progress we're seeing, and we're trying to build that relationship and influence the funders to say this is what we think we should actually be working towards with people, and it's not just ticking these certain boxes over the next 6 months. On the other hand, there is still that aspect of sometimes there's some boxes we've got to tick, and sometimes, particularly around certain contracts and things like that, sometimes you do just have to jump through the hoops and tick the boxes. But really, we're always trying to progress with all of the different funding routes we look at into something which actually helps us to build a much more human approach.
Mm-hmm. So when you are able to work in that way, in that person-centered approach, if someone was to sort of reach out and start working with Handcrafted, how long would their time with you typically be? Do people kind of come and go? Is it a year? How long can the support last?
It hugely varies. For some people, they can come in and you can unlock that potential very quickly. There's just a particular opportunity that they've never been given. And once you provide that to them, they're off, and they're off to greater things very quickly. For other people, actually, it takes a lot more work, and it can take years. And sometimes we're working with people for years to help them build that trust in us, build up routines in their life, and then start to work on developing their skills and developing their confidence. And for other people, actually, the sort of welcoming, safe community spaces that we can offer, actually that's going to be long-term part of their routine and part of their life, and we're never going to put a limit on that, because if people have finally found sort of somewhere that they can feel safe and coming to our workshop each Friday afternoon, then we're not going to tell them, actually, time's up, you have to go away again now. Actually, if it's the right thing to do, again, we want to always be looking at the person rather than the project or the funding, and keep that going for them. And that's where we've seen the real value in having such a range of things we're doing, and combining the social enterprise approach with the typical charity approach, is it gives us that more flexibility to say, actually, you're not going to tick any of our boxes on this particular form or this particular target, but we've still got a space which we're funding through other routes, which you can access for as long as you need.
How do you feel about? Do you feel proud to be able to do that? Do you feel like you're sort of navigating around the sort of charity structure in order to do that?
Yeah, I think what we're trying to do is we're trying to take the best from all the different angles. We're trying to take the best from all of the different potential funding streams that we can look at, and then offer them to the people who actually are often the least well served in our society. And that's, yeah, absolutely. That's what we're really passionate about. That's what we're excited about. What we want to do is find particular groups of people and say, actually, this really isn't working for this group of people, but let's see what we can do actually by looking at things a bit differently and taking a bit more of a sort of entrepreneurial approach to this.
It's really interesting, isn't it? That I guess you've been doing this for long enough, but were you a charity first and then started social enterprise, or which way round has the journey sort of happened, structurally speaking?
I think it's always been both. Because from very early days, we knew that we wanted to get alongside people and start doing things with them. But actually, very, very quickly, people get to a point where they realize they can make something or provide a service that's good for them. Like they can make their home look nice, or they can, they can make a bench which they like. And then they start to realize actually they've got something to offer to other people that other people want, that other people will pay for. And that's a really big step. So we quite quickly in the first few months of launching started to progress onto people looking at how they could do that, and then starting to see, again, sometimes for the very first time, actually, I've got something to offer that people want to pay me for. And so that's always been a really crucial part of what we're doing.
And I guess, you know, you've talked on a lot of different areas that Handcrafted work in, and being really responsive to individuals and individuals' needs and, you know, their history and what they want to spend time doing. To enable that to happen, is it a lot of planning, or is it learning on the go? What kind of approach do you take?
I love an ambitious plan. I love making plans. And then it's really fun looking back at them and how far they are from what's actually happened, isn't it? Because it's nicely like, oh, that's what we were planning. Oh, well. yeah, exactly. Exactly. That's part of the fun of planning, isn't it? Again, if we're going to take this, if you're really going to take a person-centered approach, you can have your plan, but until you actually meet the people and start working with them, it needs to be flexible. You need to be responsive and actually adapting to what you see, and always be ready to do that. And I am really, really proud of the team that we've got at Handcrafted. It's a very adaptable, flexible group of people who know that they're going to have to know how to run a workshop, support someone, fix up a house, do some admin. They're going to have to learn all of these skills because they're going to have to keep adapting and changing as we spot opportunities, as we run with different things. Yeah, and as I say, we're about to sort of launch our first consistently public serving cafe, and this is a brand new thing for all of them. So imagine there's an extent to which they're feeling quite daunted by that, but they've risen to a lot of challenges so far, so here we go.
It's lovely to hear, you know, you talk about being proud of a team as well, because I think people in this sector, sort of, there's so many hats and so many roles, you know, everyone's kind of a support worker and has to be, you know, really organized to manage the sort of impact and frameworks, and yeah, constantly sort of reminding yourself what role you're playing in someone's life and how the impact that your words have. I wanted to sort of touch back as well on, you know, what you were saying about looking back at plans and going like, that was not where we ended up. One of the themes of our podcast is thinking about learning from mistakes and, you know, being really honest and open that it's, of course, they're going to happen. And sometimes it feels scary to talk about mistakes when it's, you know, when you're trying to save people's lives and have a huge impact in people's lives. So we call it a facepalm moment. But what it is, you know, can you tell our listeners a time and experience that you've had when you've looked back and gone, like, how on earth did this happen?
I could do that all day. That's very much my way of working. is to learn from mistakes, and we have some very rich and extensive learning from mistakes. So yeah, absolutely. I think there's a couple of examples that particularly come to mind. In terms of planning, I can remember looking back at the early days of planning Handcrafted and the things that I think we could do. And I can remember, because I was working a full-time job as well at the time, so I can remember taking 2 weeks of annual leave at that time to train as a washing machine mechanic, because I thought that was going to be a great idea and an enterprise in that. Absolute complete waste of time. I've never done anything with that in my life apart from I once fixed our tumble dryer. But yeah, 2 weeks of my life that I won't get back there. Then also some, yeah, sort of more alarming facepalm moments. I once had the idea that, sorry, going back a little bit here, one of the other events in the build-up to Handcrafted is that there was a guy I knew from the streets of Durham who said, and I will always remember this line because it's such a powerful line. He said, for 12 years, I've been taking from people. I've been stealing things. I've been taking drugs. I've been taking benefits. I just want to give something back and do something. And so we had this idea that, okay, what we do together is we do a sponsored walk. And so we got a group of people together who had this mindset that they wanted to do something. They thought, well, let's raise a bit of money and do a sponsored walk. And so we had to go at doing the Yorkshire Three Peaks. One person was struggling a bit at first, but then got quite excited and a bit of burst of energy, ran on ahead. And by the time we got to the first peak, absolutely no idea where he had gone. And so he stood there in the middle of the countryside, thinking, I've just completely lost him. He's never been round here before. I've no idea where he's gone. He's going to have no idea where he's gone. None of us have got phone signal or anything. I thought, what do I do? How do I explain this situation? So we thought, well, all we can do is carry on. Hope we get some phone signal and we'll work out what we do with this. So we carried on. And about half an hour later, he came sprinting down behind the hill to catch up with us. And he said he'd been running ahead, but then he'd stopped and sat down because he saw a fox and he wanted to watch the fox. And then after a while of sitting there, he looked around and realized no one was following him. So he stood up, turned around and sprinted in the other direction and then caught up with us. So he gave credit to the fox for helping him find his way back. So yeah, absolutely. There's several of these sort of situations where we've ended up thinking, how on earth did we end up here? We have carried on doing those walks, by the way. They're still very successful, still 100% survival rate as well.
That is such a homeless sector type experience that happens to people. This was not what we expected or what we set out to do. You just never know what you're going to, what or where you're going to end up with stuff.
And that's absolutely the thing. You do, like, the most interesting people. And I got into working in the homeless sector after coming out of university and just getting to know people and just thinking these are the most interesting people who, for whatever reason, have been written off. But they have got so much to offer. And actually, I just find this journey of opening up opportunities for them and then seeing what people will do and will run with, sometimes literally run with. But yeah, seeing where that can go is so, relentlessly fascinating. I absolutely love it.
It sounds like you've been on quite a journey these last 12 years. Thinking back to those early days when you started out, if you were in their walking boots now starting out, what advice would you give to somebody? Yeah, so somebody looking to start making an impact within homelessness, supporting guys to move out of homelessness, what advice would you give to them? How would you structure it now, knowing what you know as a sort of somebody who's been there the hard way?
I would say, and I think the thing that I've become more and more convinced about is not to try and address one need, because actually the people that we're working with have a whole range of needs. And actually to think holistically and to think broad, and whether that's either by working with a bunch of other organizations or trying to have a range of things that you're offering. I think to meaningfully work with people, you need that much broader approach. And that's why in some ways, it can look quite busy and chaotic at Hangrafton, and there's a lot of different things going on, and it's quite hard to sort of quickly capture all the different things that we're trying to do. But that's part of just trying to work with the person rather than with the project. But then the other side of that is there's a real synergy to that. There's a real sort of economy of scale, because actually you've got a team who can deliver different things, access different funding streams, access different contracts, bring in money through the social enterprise route. And so it works in a practical sense as well as a very personal sense. So I'd really push people towards sort of trying to think more holistically at things like homelessness, addiction, mental health, education, enterprise, all as part of one bigger picture.
I think we are seeing more sort of multidisciplinary, routes and groups to support people. Thinking kind of further upstream, I guess, a lot of the work within the homelessness sector is around crisis intervention, at the point where someone is, sort of rough sleeping or has been for some time. Through the conversations that you've had and the people that you've met through Hangrafton, what do you think in terms of prevention we could do more of? As a sector, as communities?
In terms of prevention, one of my really big passions is around working with children and with young people. I know I've got I've got adopted children and foster children. I'm really passionate about trying to work with people in the care system and work with them younger. So we're not waiting till people get to that sort of cliff edge at 18. And so actually the people who have the biggest needs, actually we're starting to integrate them into support at a younger age, which can then continue beyond 18. That's one sort of cliff edge that I'm particularly passionate about. But I think there's lots of other transition points which can be really hard for people, whether it's leaving prison, sort of fleeing domestic abuse, where actually the more we can do to try and engage with people earlier on, I think there's a lot of times where we can prevent it getting to the point where they become so marginalized, so cut off from support that actually they end up in that crisis point of homelessness, for example.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, it's a difficult one, isn't it? I always think sort of, when you mentioned education earlier, my sort of nieces and nephews and things in their schools now are doing more life skills and practical things. But when I was in school, we certainly didn't do anything. You know, maybe we'd make a mac and cheese once. But in terms of understanding, you know, even like changing a light bulb, what a mortgage means, what a pension means, you know, all these sort of little things that unless you've got sort of a family or support network that are teaching you about the ways of the world, really hard to navigate.
Where does your social motivation come from? It's really interesting. You've got a day you touched upon then adoption and fostering in your home life, and then you're dealing with homelessness and asylum seeking young people in the day job. Where does your social motivation come from?
So for me, it's a really core thing. I think it's really important for me that it's a core belief that I have about the world, the universe, about people, is that everyone has value, that everyone has something to offer, and that's an absolute for me, and it applies to everyone without exception. For me, it goes back to my sort of faith basis, my belief that people are made with purpose and with value. And yeah, and so really the sort of work that I'm doing is an extension of that, that it's on that basis, because of that belief about people, we need to step up where some people are being written off and treated as if they are worthless or treated as if they don't deserve to have somewhere to live or something to do or something to offer society. So that's where sort of that relentless drive to treat people as valuable comes from for me. And yeah, and there is, yeah, and so it is every part, yeah, in every part of my life for me. So we have a very busy home life with lots of children running around, and that extends into handcrafted. And I've been really, really lucky this year, because I've actually managed to leave the day job behind and go full time at Handcrafted, which is fantastic, because I can really commit more to what I'm really passionate about. But I'm just more stressful, if anything, because now I'm fully consumed with wanting to build this up and drive this forward.
Brilliant. It sounds almost like you kind of feel you have a responsibility, and it's, you know, it's a lovely trait to have, to, you know, want to be supporting people, and it, that, you know, bleeds through all of your life. I mean the impact that people can make when they think like that is huge. What do you do to look after yourself, you know, when you have that kind of responsibility and want to do things for everyone else? I can imagine it's really challenging when things don't go the way that you'd hope. It's a lot of weight on your shoulders. Is there, you know, is it about speaking to people? Is it about, I don't know, going on a bike ride? You know, what's your kind of remedy?
I think for me, a big part of what I find really helpful, again, comes back to this team. I talked about how they're very flexible and adaptable. And actually, with the staff team we've got a team of people who are similarly passionate about getting alongside people in the really difficult situations of life, and share yeah, and a lot of them share that belief in there is purpose, there is value, there is a greater purpose behind all of this. And yeah, so being part of that team, and the other strength of having that faith basis to the work is actually it's also a belief that I'm not the answer to everyone's problems. I feel like I do have a responsibility to do what I can do, but at the end of the day, it's not all reliant on me. And last year I had the amazing privilege I was to give the eulogy for my dad. And one of the really striking things there was that I was speaking to a room of people who knew lots of different aspects of his life. So people who knew him as a school governor or as a church warden or as a club treasurer, all of those different things. But none of them realized that actually he was doing all of the other things. Because actually what he modeled is he lived his life. He didn't put any effort into sort of taking credit for what he was doing. And he didn't feel sort of the pressure of the outcomes necessary on him. What he did is he just consistently, faithfully sort of used his time as best he could to help other people. And no one really knew the full extent of what he was doing. And it was at that point everyone came together and sort of realized that he had done a lot. And so that was the point where as I was stood up and sort of explaining this to people and talking about that and sort of celebrating that way that he had faithfully served, I thought, actually, yeah, I realized how much that had influenced me and shaped the way I live. And that actually you can give a lot if you don't try and take too much credit for it and don't take responsibility for the outcomes. So I want to give people the opportunities, and we see a lot of fantastic outcomes, but it's not on me to like force that through. And that does help take some of the weight off. But yeah, it is what I'm passionate about, and I enjoy it, and I keep doing it. So yeah.
Thank you for sharing that. Your passion for it completely shines through. It's really infectious, you know, hearing you sort of speak about wanting to do, and it's such a human approach to say, right, I'm going to do, you know, what I can for you, and to not take responsibility. And I think the way that we do, you know, sort of record things, the data we capture, the, you know, impact monitoring stuff kind of does draw you away from that, because it can feel like if you can't say this person has reached this milestone, that it's done. And actually so much of it's planting seeds. You know, it might be that someone doesn't come back, they don't finish a program, they don't move into a house and get married and have a child, you know, just because we're not sort of being prescriptive in what we're expecting. It might be that the next person that tries to reach out to help them, you know, can get to a next stage.
Yeah, absolutely. No, thank you. That is exactly what we're going for. Like, I'm glad, because that's a perfect summary. So I'm really happy that that's what came across.
It's been brilliant having you on. Dan, where can people find out about Handcrafted? Yeah, social media.
Yeah. So I guess if you look for Handcrafted on social media, we're on there somewhere. Handcrafted.org.uk is our website. And as we get on top of that and more things start launching, then you can find stuff out about us on there.
Thank you for listening. Please subscribe for more episodes. You can also follow us on Twitter at thismuch_weknow or email us thismuchweknow@homelesslink.org.uk.